And now,
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, I'm back. And today we have a very special guest, Dr. Patson Zamara. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for joining us today.
We've been trying to get you for a while.
And
yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know, for those watching live, they can see he's a bit stressed, so we might as well go straight into it. I just saw a tweet literally 5 seconds ago that Pastor Evan has landed in Harare. That's the case.
Yeah, true. Pastor Ivan came through today. Unfortunately, he was not allowed through the immigration. He's detained as we speak. So we're still awaiting how that is going to unfold.
Why did he come back so clandestinely? No one knew. Okay, well, on the public side, let me say, it's rather interesting that he's chosen to come back now. And
well, I didn't think he had to announce he's coming back. Just like
he's coming back home, so yeah, he didn't have to announce.
Yeah. That's fair.
But also, it coincides with the launching of 21 Days of Activism. So I'm assuming that this has all been coordinated.
Not really.
Not really.
Just a coincidence.
So the plan was for him to come back. Is he coming back for good? Is he coming back and leaving again? Like, what? I'm sure that these are questions that people are going to ask. I'm quite interested.
Well, from the last time I spoke to him, it's him returning home. This is his home.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So whether it's for a short while or it's for good, I don't know. But he's coming back home.
Okay. That's quite interesting. I mean, from the reports that were going around last year, it seemed like he'd gone for good, sort of asylum. But it's really positive to see him back.
Yeah,
to see him back, and it's quite.
And you guys are eating humble pie. And now look, he's back. He's back.
No, definitely quite interesting. To see what's going to happen. He's been detained. Do you know why he's been detained?
Well, I'm sure it's to do with the previous issue, subverting a constitutionally elected government. I'm sure it has everything to do with that.
Of course. But he walked out the country a free man, so they're going to have to lay new charges on him. Or
yeah, of course. Look, these people are agitating, and they are jittery. They know that their time is up. And so they're going to do whatever they can to see to it that they truncate the voice of the people.
Right. But what does it mean, though, for the citizens' movement or the activists now that Pastor Ivan had returned, in the sense that it had taken a dip at some point last year, especially after he left and people thought that, you know, he'd left for good, and there was a sort of, this flag movement had a bit of a dip, and it started to pick up a bit, I suppose, towards the end of the year. So what sort of dynamic, what does it mean for the citizens' movement this year and going forward?
I think the bottom line is that the struggle or the quest towards a better Zimbabwe is not hinged upon a particular individual, okay? That's why it's a movement. We all play different roles. However, and in spite of that, when Pastor Ivan left, that sent a negative message as far as what we represent is concerned. And the ripple effect of that, obviously, was negative as far as our momentum is concerned or was concerned. But I think his coming back in the same vein speaks a very good and positive message. It actually nullifies the negative impact his departure had. But having said that, I think it's pertinent for me to underscore the fact that it's not about Ivan. It's not about anybody. It's about every Zimbabwean. This is the citizen movement. Everyone who is a Zimbabwean has got to plug in and do what they have to do insofar as our quest towards a better Zimbabwe is concerned.
That's true. That's true. It is about every Zimbabwean. I can completely agree with you on that. But like today, we're fortunate enough for our listeners to have you here. So yeah, I think you can tell us a bit more about yourself, And, you know, obviously, like we know from following in the media, but I mean, maybe someone in the diaspora would not really know, Kuti, how did Dr. Patson become an activist? Where did it start? Was it always in your blood? Or what's the genesis? When did it start?
I would say I was forced to fight. And the inception of the fight has everything to do with what happened to my brother. As we are all aware, Itai Dzamara was abducted on the 9th of March in 2015. So we're getting to 2 years now. When Itai was abducted, I was left with no option but to fight for justice regarding the injustice that had been committed against Itai, against my family, and largely against Zimbabwe. I've always stated that my fight is not entirely about Itai, but about the disregard of the rule of law and human rights in Zimbabwe. And so this certainly has been a very tumultuous and austere season period for me, having to morph into an activist. I was minding my own business, speaking at conferences, writing my books, and lecturing. And when this happened, I had to jump in and I had to do what I had to do. And so in a short space of time, I moved into an activist by default. But I do believe that it was also divinely orchestrated. After all is said and done, I also think and still believe that whatever happened to Itai, whatever his fate is, it's all going to contribute and work towards our collective agenda for a better Zimbabwe.
Okay, that's great. Go ahead.
On the issue of Itai and you joining the struggle after he had after his disappearance, what before that, before his disappearance, whilst he was still laying his protest in Africa Unity Square, what were your thoughts on his protest whilst he was undertaking it? Because you said you joined after that, after his disappearance. So was there at any point where you thought, you know, let me go and join him, let me support what he is trying to do?
Apparently, when Itai started the campaign, I'm one of the first individuals he called. He informed me he wanted to take that up. We discussed at length, and I told him that it was noble and I would support him, which I did. So many people do not know this, but I'm actually one of the trustees for Occupy Africa Union Square. Mm-hmm. But you see, from the onset, we agreed that we would not plunge in both of us at the same time because it was risky. That's why you realize that almost every time Itai and his crew were in trouble, I was the first person to attend to them. That was my role. So I was more like playing the backstage role, attending to them, making sure that whenever there is something that's needed to be done, I do that. Like most of the photos you see of Itai campaigning, I'm the one who took them. Whenever they would get arrested, I would be the first person to attend to them, conduct the lawyers, and make sure that everything would be in order. So that was my role. It was not directly involved in the process, but when Itai was abducted, I was forced to then directly get involved. And I know so many people ask a lot of questions because I should be the last person doing what I do, simply because I do have a vivid and a fresh example as to what happened to my brother. And I should be the person to lounge back from doing what I do. But I do what I do simply because I know for a fact that it's a noble cause. Not only that, I've always stated that you cannot kill a dead person. A dead person cannot be dead. Yeah, I know there's no word such as dead here, but I'll use it just to express my point. Yeah, a dead person or a dead thing can't be deadier than being dead. And so you cannot kill a dead person. What we've gone through and what we've endured as a result of Itai's abduction has rendered us dead in certain aspects and regard. And so that's the reason why I'm motivated to keep on keeping on.
Okay, so I suppose some would say bravery, others would say stupidity. But you're saying, you know, you've already reached bottom, so they can't take anything away more from you.
True.
But I mean, they've tried. We've had issues, you know, with your car being burnt down. You yourself personally have been beaten up a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a segue into saying, okay, obviously, you know, you're fighting this regime, this apparatus of maybe terrorism or of intimidation constantly. So I want to know, Kuti, how is it then that you keep motivated and, you know, even given, like, your comrade today has just landed at the airport, he's already been taken without even setting foot in the motherland. How are you going to keep motivated as yourself personally, and how you might suggest that any budding activists or activists that are in the streets now who might listen should keep motivated, because especially going up to elections, I think it's going to get even tougher.
True that. I've always stated that a better Zimbabwe is not going to be delivered on a silver platter. It's going to cost us blood. It's going to cost us tears. It's going to cost us sweat. It's going to even cost us lives. And so we must be prepared for that. Some of us, we are like dead men who are walking the streets of Harare, because we never know what's going to happen the next minute. You know, you might be just seated in a restaurant chatting to your girlfriend, and the next thing you are picked up. And so I think we must get to that point where we just settle in ourselves that anything can happen anytime, and this quest towards a better Zimbabwe is actually going to cause us to pass through heinous and austere seasons, and it's going to come at a cost. The better Zimbabwe is going to be delivered at a cost.
Yeah. I understand that. So
I want to ask, when you say a better Zimbabwe, what are some of the tenets of this better Zimbabwe? What would you describe as a better Zimbabwe?
I think fundamentally one of the key issues has everything to do with the upholding of the rule of law, the regard of human rights. For example, our constitution provides that any Zimbabwean can protest, petition, demonstrate peacefully. But whenever we get to do that, we are tortured, we are arrested, at times we are abducted, and I think the abduction of Itai Dzamara is an attestation of that. And that's not what we want to see in a better Zimbabwe. And so a better Zimbabwe will certainly entail the upholding of the rule of law. It will certainly entail that the constitution, the supreme law of the land, will be observed by all and sundry.
Okay. A lot of the criticism you face recently, especially, has come from Amwema activists, other activists themselves. You know, there's this feeling, like, I think also, you know, online social media and that kind of thing, things have seasons and they sort of pass quickly. You know, this flag yakapisa, tajamuka yakapisa, the end game yakamopisa, bond notes, those type of protests. You know, I mean, we're getting into a digital age of meme activism. To that, you know, Kuti, so what extent then do you think that perhaps there's some level of compromise going out. The activist movement has been compromised, or are you still? Do you think all your comrades and things are still genuine? In as far as that, you know, lots of social media accusations going left, right, and center at yourself, of course. And at everyone, at Promise, at Pastor Eva, and at everyone, they've had these accusations of being fake, being plants, being C10, or, you know, recently of faking abductions or faking things like that. I mean, obviously, these are things that are personal to you, but how do you, you know, how do you answer that? And do you even think that some of them are fair?
Well, there are two dimensions to this. The first dimension has everything to do with what the system has done and what the system is doing to thwart the citizens' movement. Then the second dimension has everything to do with what the activists themselves have done, knowingly or unknowingly, to destabilize the momentum of the citizens' movement. But all that is expected. That is the bottom line. And we are not going to pay attention to that, because at the end of the day, what we know is that the system, the regime, will not allow us to freely free flow in our quest for a better Zimbabwe. So they will come up with these unfounded theories. They will come up with these lies so as to demonize us, so as to character assassinate us. And that certainly has a negative ripple effect insofar as how people look at us. Credibility is critical. Now, in the same vein, as a result of immaturity among some of our comrades, we realize that they have also assumed the same posture, and some are certainly compromised. But like I said, the bottom line is we are not going to allow ourselves to be cajoled into a shell of silence. We've kicked ourselves out of that, and we're not going to stop. We will continue agitating. We will continue taking a stand for what is right. We will continue taking a stand for a better Zimbabwe, because we have no other option, actually.
Okay. Going back to Itai briefly, I just wanted to find out, you last year, I think it was in May, you had a press conference where there was a picture that came out, and it was in the news day, apparently, where I saw the article. I think it was the 30th of May, and you told the journalist there or whoever was there that some sympathetic security agents had sent you a picture of Itai, and that more details were to come. So I wanted to find out, what was that picture real? What then happened after that, following the picture?
Well, it's something we're still processing. As you know, these matters are dicey. When you're dealing with them, you must be adroit. Not only that, you must also exercise a great deal of circumspect. You see, that is Itai. No two ways about that. Okay? And
how do you know that? You say no two ways about that. How do you know?
He's my brother.
But from the picture, yeah. I suppose, you know,
there are features we identified.
Okay.
Not only that,
uh-huh.
We also employed the services of a forensic expert,
okay,
who asked us to bring other photos of him,
okay,
and they juxtaposed those to that, and they also get the same conclusion. But even before that, we actually had concluded that that's the tie on that photo,
from the eyes and the feet,
exactly, from the eyes and from the feet. Everyone, myself, the wife, Itai's mother, Itai's father,
mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Okay. Just for those who haven't seen the picture, it's he's covered, and it's his feet, and he's covered, his mouth is covered, and his head,
yeah.
His hair is covered, and the eyes are showing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then you said after that the processes, there are processes being done.
Yeah, behind the scenes, okay. The legal processes, and investigations.
Okay.
Yes. In the fullness of time, we'll be able to divulge more information. See, there's a legal tangent to this, and most people don't know that.
Mm.
For example, I do know certain names, okay? I mean, from the investigations we have carried thus far, I've been privileged to know certain names involved in the abduction of Itai Dzamara, okay? Now, from a legal standpoint, we have to pay due diligence as to how we're going to handle that. Because in our quest to try and unmask the truth regarding what transpired to Itai, we might also land ourselves in unnecessary trouble. And that will impede the entire process we are engaged in. And so after all is said and done, the bottom line is we are working flat out behind the scenes. And this is something we cannot announce every now and again to say, we are now at this stage, we are now at that stage. No. In the fullness of time, as we go on, we'll be able to tell the world what would have gathered.
Okay.
All right. So that's fair. I think so you've given us a brief, very brief history, and I also know that you're pressed for time. I think you want to rush to the airport, you were saying. So you said, you know, before you were lecturing, selling your books, then, you know, circumstances forced you into activism. I am led to believe that you don't just want to be activist. Like, it's that's not where the end game is, to use your own phrase. Specifically with 2018 coming along, do you think that you'll take the leap or the plunge into the political sphere, into adding your voice to the council or parliament or any of those things? And do you think that you would be more effective there, or in your position and the voice and the following you've got now, you're as effective or as efficient as you are now?
Well, I'm not in any way unsure as to what my purpose is. My purpose revolves around leadership. And having said that, leaders are problem solvers. Leaders are solution bearers, okay? And so with that in mind, I'm not going to complain all my life. It's only a matter of time before I also plunge into the mainstream as far as political leadership is concerned.
Okay. And any particular party that's quoting you?
That's what I want to find out. Any particular party?
Or maybe a second or a third force, possibly, because there's, you know, WhatsApp is an interesting thing. I think your name and a couple of other activists' name came up on this list for possible parliamentary candidates for third force.
Okay.
And obviously that's a project that's being pushed by Honorable Maliswa.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that's where you'd go, or maybe join one of the existing political parties.
Okay.
Or form your own even. I think that's popular these days.
Okay. I think two or three things there. I do think that we have more than enough opposition political parties. Apparently, there are over 50 registered opposition political parties. And that's ridiculous. That's ludicrous, in my view. In my engagement, even with the leaders, the likes of Tsvangirai, BT, Mujuru, I advocate for a coalition. Okay? There's no need for us to fight ZANU-PF in such an isolated fashion, because it's going to be almost impossible for us to dismantle the machinery called ZANU-PF. Okay? So I think that also answers the question about whether I do have ambitions to form a political party.
So
I think it would be stupid of me to do that.
So which political party will you join?
Honestly, I've been invited to take up membership in more than, I think it should be more than 9 political parties at this point in time.
9 of the 50.
Yes, 9 of the 50. Yeah. I have not committed to any political party at this point in time.
Let me ask, what would you look for, or what is it that would attract you to joining a political party?
Well, if I think the first thing has to do with whether they recognize gifts or not. There are some people who are position oriented and focused, such that whenever they are in the vicinity of a gift, they are threatened, and they actually then try and pillage the gifted person or the gift.
So you believe you are the gift?
No, I believe I have a gift.
Okay, you believe you have a gift?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe I have a gift.
So
which
they have to...
Leadership.
Okay.
Yes.
So they would have to recognize your leadership.
Yeah,
gift.
Of course. You see, this is what I even stated to all the political parties who have approached me. I told them, you know what, I think I've passed that stage where I'll just get in just for the sake of being a member. I have something to offer. I have something to offer. And because I do have something to offer, I think it's imperative and pertinent that whatever I can offer is recognized.
Okay. And so your relationship with Honorable Mliswa?
Yes.
Nathaniel Maneru wrote about it.
Yeah.
He called you his tenant. Mm-hmm. And then there was the other...
The
activist, Makombo Rero, who also alluded to the fact that you were Temba Mliswa's, you were Temba Mliswa's tenant as well. So what is the relationship there? Is it that you are just a tenant in a landlord situation? Is there hopes that you'll be part of this third force that he is mobilizing? Does it go beyond the tenant landlord? Is it also political? Like,
okay, here's the bottom line. Honorable Mliswa, TP, I refer to him as TP, is a senior brother to me.
Okay.
Above every other thing, Mr. Mliswa Temba is my brother. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brother in the same sense that he is ED's cousin? Or
not at all. I met Mliswa when I was doing my A-levels, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, at that point in time, I was working with Mliswa. And this, you know, that was my first time to enter into Mikos. We met at Mikos. And he said something to me after our conversation. He said, young man, your wisdom is beyond your age. I think you're going to be a great leader. That's what he said. And so ever since then, we have developed a relationship. And to me, he's a senior brother. I just look up to him the way I look up to Itai. I'm not in any way his surrogate. No. I'm not in any way... a yes man to him. I'm objective. We cross-pollinate. I'm my own man. You know, I do my things. He does his things. And I just like the fact that he is one of the few individuals who really have managed to see what other people don't see, the hidden treasure and the capacity I have as a leader. That's the reason why even at some point he actually wanted me to lead Yard. He proposed that in a meeting. I was a part of Yard. I'm no longer a part of Yard. He proposed that in a meeting, and he was serious. He said, you know what? I want this young man to lead Yard because he believes in me. And so that's the relationship we have. I'm not a bootlicker in any way. If you see us discussing and talking, you might think that at times we're enemies. Why? Because we're brutally honest with each other. There are times I call him Bandara. I read what you were saying. What's up with that? And he explains himself, and it's just a cross pollination like that. So that's how we relate. And yes, of course, unashamedly, I'm his tenant, and I can be anyone's tenant. I can be your tenant. I can be.
Please.
You can't be tenant to a Charamba, please. Especially with Maneru attacking me like this. Yeah, so time is moving. I don't know if there's any last words.
I mean, I just want to ask also, this doctor,
mm-hmm.
your title,
yeah.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Is it a medical doctor, a PhD in political studies, like the good professor?
Well, you know why I'm laughing? It's because it has also attracted a lot of debate and attacks.
Certainly.
And, I mean, whoever picks a fight with me, they eventually then use that. I think the common words are the guy who masquerades as a doctor, or fake PhD, or the guy who bought a PhD, something like that. I went to school. I did my PhD in India.
Okay.
Yes. And the PhD is in business leadership.
Okay.
Yes. I'm actually working on my second PhD as we speak, whilst others are labeling as fake doctors, etc. Well, it's understandable.
It's because there's a lot of fake doctors in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
People here buy their PhDs.
Yeah.
It's no secret. Some are given honorary PhDs,
mm-hmm.
and at the end of the day, they walk around calling themselves Dr. So-and-so with an honorary PhD.
But my brother, I was never a member of the gang of looters. where did I get the money to buy a PhD? where did I get the money for?
I don't know how much it costs to buy a PhD.
I think it's the issue has everything to do with my age.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where people then say, but how did he? But, well, I did.
How old are you if you
I'm 30. Money?
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
So you can't be vice president of a party yet because you still got 10 years before you can be president.
Not now.
But you might be going there anyway. You said you actually talking about that. You used to write books. Are you going to give us a memoir on the struggle?
Definitely.
I think your voice might be definitive. And also, where can people find some of your writings? I think maybe. People will be interested to see what you were doing before all this and how perhaps it shaped you now.
Yeah. I've written several books to date. I've published 7 books. But what I need to state is that I pretty much self-published the books. I've only just engaged an international publisher. I'll be traveling soon, and the reason I'll be traveling so that we might firm up on the deal, which will entail that the books will be distributed and they will be accessible internationally. And so I'm still writing. I'm hoping that before the year end, I'll be able to release 2 more books. My forte is leadership. I'm finishing a book on leadership. And then another one on the struggle and the experience.
On the struggle.
Yeah,
that's the one we're looking forward to.
Yeah, you're entering politics is something that you've said that you know you're the next stage. I suppose is that there will come a time that you enter the political arena.
Yeah.
What is your ideology? What is your political ideology? What is it that you think people? That will attract,
why should people vote for you?
Why should people vote for why?
Besides being a leader,
can I tell you something?
Because there are lots of great leaders. I mean, Hitler was a great leader, and at some point Mugabe was also a great leader. So, besides the quality of leadership, which in of itself can be used for good and bad, as we've clearly seen in Zimbabwe, that people have been following someone, and that's leading in its own respect. So, mm-hmm. what ideology will set you apart? What reasons should people follow you?
Okay.
Besides having the ability to persuade people to follow you.
I think what is lacking is what is commonly referred to as servanthood leadership. Okay? People get into parliament and into politics for what they can get. And that's what we're seeing in Zimbabwe. The rich people in Zimbabwe are politicians. And that is abnormal. And so my philosophy, my leadership philosophy zeroes in on the servanthood leadership principle. That is, bro, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't talk about. You see, the thing also, we end up getting too academic and too sophisticated for nothing, talking about ideology, this ideology. No, we don't need that.
You know what? I don't think so, in the sense that there must be something that the masses can unite around.
Yeah.
And as a leader, certainly as an individual, mm-hmm. your focus must be on service leadership,
exactly.
right? Mm-hmm. But there must be something that the people have a buy into and a belief in towards building together as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that is your ideology that makes that that can relate to the common man, aside from you saying service leadership? Yes, you as an individual, yes. But mm-hmm. what about the collective?
Yeah.
What is the responsibility of the collective? What is the collective aspiring to? And how is the collective going to move from that space into the space that you'd want it to go to?
But my thinking is it therefore cascades to everyone or my followership that our inclination, okay, is civil leadership. Okay, that's what it is. I know about the ideologies. I mean, but I don't want to get into that. It's too philosophical for nothing. It's too sophisticated for nothing.
But
the bottom line, in my view, the bottom line, what we lack in Zimbabwe are seven leaders. That's what we lack.
But you know why?
The reason why we have individuals like Anaka Sukwere, they are building mansions. I don't know where he got the money from. He's a civil servant, just like my father.
No, but listen,
where does he get the money to build a mansion?
I hear all of that.
Yeah.
Right? But my issue is that Hondo Yeminda, for example,
yeah.
or Ivukuvanu, right?
That's a mantra.
It is, yeah. but it formed part of the ideology, right? That these people then managed to get a mass following to support it. When land reform happened, there was a mass following of people that supported it because they bought into the ideology of
yeah.
Ivukuvanu,
yeah.
right? So, yes, servant leadership, mm-hmm. but it's also an ideology.
It's an ideology.
It okay. is an ideology, okay. yeah. Where we are saying we serve each other, okay? If I'm sweeping the street, I'm serving you. And so, while you're driving past, okay, you're not going to look at me as someone who is a nobody. We are serving each other. This is servant leadership, and it's a philosophy. It's an ideology.
That's what I was wanting you to articulate.
The ideology is servant leadership.
No, that's fine, and that's what I wanted
and that
him
will
to articulate.
Inform his policies and
exactly.
things from there.
But are we serving the people?
But I think also what happens is it's often not enough. For I think what Chris was getting at is that it's not enough often for people in opposition, particularly, mm-hmm. to simply say that we're going to be better leaders than the people in government.
Uh-huh.
But what I think the nuanced thing about that is that when you're in government, you're already making policy.
Yeah.
You're already implementing things. So uh-huh. necessarily when you're in opposition,
uh-huh.
you have to post ideas to counteract those ideas more than just saying, Kuti, those guys are thieves. I am not a thief. When these guys were stealing, I know you're going to be working with other people,
uh-huh.
but it's not enough just to say anymore, especially for us and our generation,
yes,
younger people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We question further, Kuti. Fine, you know, Tsvangirai has been saying for 17 years,
yeah.
Kuti, you know, he's going to work this way, but
mm-hmm.
it's not enough anymore. And I think maybe right now you're an activist and you're not yet a politician, but when mm-hmm. you do become a politician, please bear in mind that for us, it's not enough to simply say Zanu Award or Mugabe must go or these guys are thieves. Because that's fine. Everyone knows that.
But
what are
you
going to add?
Can I tell you something?
What are you going to give?
Can I tell you something? I have taken time to read and breeze through the values of ZANU-PF and what it stands for. There's nothing wrong there. And there's nothing we ought to change. There.
On paper.
There's nothing we ought to change. But you see, what we have to change are the actors and the actresses.
Do you know what?
That's a hot take.
Let me say this. Last week in this chair, we had Tariro Senderai.
Yeah.
In this exact same chair.
Uh-huh.
And she said something
vote,
very
similar.
She said
she would vote for
that.
A ZANU-PF MP as long as...
No. That's not what I said.
No, I know it's not what you said. But what she said was, if it comes down to what the person stands for and the amount of work that the person is going to put in. Why are you in that position? If you are there to serve, mm-hmm. then I will vote for you, right?
Yeah.
And she got a lot of fallback on Facebook, people calling her ZANU-PF plant, people saying she's her campaign is being sponsored by ZANU-PF and all sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, but I what you're saying in terms of the on paper is basically, I think, what a lot of people think. Mm-hmm. But now there's this perception that if you say one thing that is good about ZANU-PF, mm-hmm.
you are ZANU-PF.
No, look, as far as ZANU-PF is concerned, I think the summation of what ZANU-PF stands for and represents is black empowerment. That's the summation, in my view,
mm-hmm.
black empowerment. And what is wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
It is how they have implemented that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the problem is. And so I do not have a problem with the principles and the values they stand on. I have a problem with the actors and the actresses because they've digressed from the principles. They've digressed from the fundamentals upon which that part was born. Look, we were all brought up under ZANU-PF.
Not all of us.
Not all of us. Most of us, we were. At some point, my mother was an active member of ZANU-PF in Mutoko. I remember at some point, I don't know whether he's still there. She actually was given a stand because of what they did during the war. And she put that stand in my name. I mean, I don't know whether he's still there or not. But my point is, that's my background, okay? But when they were fighting during the Liberation War, they never extrapolated a season whereby their children would be abducted for speaking up, whereby their children would be killed, would be tortured for taking a stand against bad governance. They never fought for that. And so this is a production of the actors and the actresses. That's where we have a problem with Mugabe and those I call his minions.
Okay, fair enough. I just have one more question. You're 30.
Yeah.
2018.
It's not your
coming
year.
Up. It's not your year to run for president. Who would you, Patson Zamara, like to see as president in 2018?
That's an interesting one. Like I said, look, I've had the opportunity to interact with the likes of Changirai, Biti, Muchuru. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have deep regard for all of them,
mm-hmm.
for whatever they represent. Okay, we have been consistently telling them that you must form a coalition, and whoever is going to lead the coalition is debatable. It's neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. But of course, my personal preference would be Changirai.
Okay,
the reason being that, as far as the figures are concerned, he has the numbers.
Okay.
Of course, there are issues. I mean, there are issues. MDC has split.
Majiga Zuru Mkoma. Majiga Zuru.
I know. Okay, fine. I have a question.
Yeah.
Of all the political cousins which emanated from MDC, which one has a bigger constituency? I mean, if you are to juxtapose their constituents with that of MDC, who has a bigger constituent?
Yeah, no.
No, that's true.
That's true.
I mean, that's the point. Because politics, at the end of the day, in my view, is a game of numbers. Okay? And so, in my view, Changirai brings the most numbers to the table.
Yeah.
And my subjective opinion would be, well, he leads the coalition. But of course, I mean, it's neither here nor there.
Okay.
All right. So when are the activists going to get around that push and that call for a coalition? I think as a suggestion, perhaps it needs to be more active. The citizens' movements need to, not just in your personal capacity, but mm-hmm. perhaps your next hashtag is "We want coalition now."
Exactly. Look, maybe
hashtag coalition now.
Maybe to preempt something that's coming. Without a coalition, we're actually going to boycott the election.
Okay.
Yeah. No coalition.
No election. No vote.
Yeah. I'm not going to vote for you If you do not put me ahead of your personal agendas, ahead of your ego, I'm not going to vote for you. That's what we want in our view, from where we're coming from. Remember what I said. We said ZANU-PF, whatever it stands for, its fundamental principles, they are not necessarily wrong. Okay? What is wrong are the players. And that's what we want to change. Mr. Mugabe and his minions.
All of them.
All of them. We kick them out. And then we start on a new page, on a new trajectory as a nation. That's how I look at it.
That is your political right. Thank you very much, Dr. Patson Samara. It's been great having you here. We hope to have you back. We hope
as things progress.
Yeah, we hope you'd also like to come back.
Oh, definitely.
And you can break all the news on our show from now on.
Thank you.
But where do people find you online and your writings and things like that? If you
On Facebook, I'm active on Facebook, Patson Samara. On Twitter, Patson Samara as well.
Okay.
Let's get talking.
All right.
Yeah, thanks.
My name is Christopher Farai Charamba. You can find me at Chris Charamba on all social media.
And I'm Tawande Henry Beatty at Henry Beatty on all social media. And yeah, you've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263.
Free to say it, free to do it.
Cheers, guys. And now,
Capital 263.